I don't normally give lectures in such holy environments, so this is a new experience. It's a good one. I was actually here about 7 years ago talking about the Kobe Mandel Foundation. I don't know if any of you have heard of Camp Kobe. What high schools are you from in, before you came here? Where's that?
DRS.
Anyone from Okay, so a lot of those schools I went to, a lot of those schools I've been to when I used to work for Camp Kobe and bringing kids to Camp Kobe. Yeshiva Flatbush, is there anyone from Yeshiva Flatbush? No. Alright, so, but we're not talking about Camp Kobe today. We're talking this, you know what, maybe we can have a bit of light at the back just because it's after lunch and we like to flip a little bit, right? A little bit more. So, you can guess which one I am on the screen, right? Meantime, I'm the
best looking one,
that's exactly right. So I'm the, I'm the one on the left, meantime. So, any guesses on my accent? New Zealand is the correct answer. Well done. So, I've been living in Israel for 14 years, actually. Came here when I was younger, now I'm not so young, and actually, I don't just do this, I work for an organization, what did you say the name of your school is, JDC?
JEC.
JEC. So I work for an organization called JDC, or actually, in short, it's called The Joint, it's not what you think, maybe it is what you think, but it's not. Basically, it's the largest humanitarian, Jewish humanitarian aid organization in the world. I'm helping hungry Jews all around the world, helping to build the State of Israel and so on, and that's where I work full-time, raising money for Jews in need, basically. At the same time, and for the last 10 years, I've been lecturing around the world, and mostly in Israel, on these kinds of topics. Israel and the Palestinians, terrorism, conflict, and so on. Now I don't do that full-time, but I do it on the side like I am today. Okay, and that's what we're going to discuss today. I'm a lawyer by, training, New Zealand trained, Israel trained, but I choose to work in these kinds of fields because that's the, for the work in the Jewish world as such, okay? Now, let's begin. I want to show you a picture of a bathroom, okay? Now, everyone see okay? It's a bit unusual to start a lecture with a picture of a bathroom. This bathroom is in a city called Amsterdam. Okay, heard of that? So, not Amsterdam anywhere else, but Amsterdam, which you think, in Europe, okay? In the Netherlands. So, here's a bathroom. You can go inside. You can sit on the toilet, do what you need to do, and you can just watch the world go by. Glass walls. Public toilet. Okay, now it's really interesting. I talk with a lot of birthright groups. Often mixed groups, guys and girls, and you always ask the question, you know, if you're in Amsterdam, you've just had your kosher Chinese meal and it's not sitting well in the tummy, you can't make it back to the hotel, would you use this bathroom? And of course all the guys are like, yeah man, let me at it. And all the girls like cross their legs and get, like, can't sit still and like are nervous, right? So that's pretty much how we break down the sexes, okay? So how of you would use this bathroom? Glass walls, middle of Amsterdam, a sore tummy. Got to use the bathroom, right? So that's what I thought. Okay, so imagine that. Imagine that in your own house, right? You have a party at your house, you have whatever at your house. You just need some time out. You can watch the party going on from your bathroom. Okay, it's see-through. Now on the outside is a mirror. Okay, so anyone on the outside can't see what's going on the inside. Kind of great, hey? All right, now, we won't keep her too long because she looks like she's in a hurry. But the fact is this. Why at the beginning of a workshop on Israel and the Palestinians, the settlements, Yehuda v'Shamron, all those kinds of issues, why oh why would I begin to show you that toilet in Amsterdam? Yo. Okay, good. Anyone else? Yo.
Some things going on inside that
You have a better view from the inside than the outside?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can only tell from your friend.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
I feel like the Jews are all over the inside of the bathroom. Like, they would be able to go respectively on the outside.
Good. Okay, nice. Oh, deep. Want to repeat that?
In my work, like, I'm going to wash you.
Okay, good. So I got a question. When you wake up for Shacharit in the morning and you stumble over to the mirror somehow and you lift your head and you look in the mirror, and after the initial shock of, oh, what have I become, right? Then you look at yourself, right? What do you see in that mirror? You see yourself. Now, when I grew up in New Zealand, besides, you know, sheep and stuff like that, which was pretty much all we had to worry about, okay? On campus, when I went to college campus, all right, when I was at university, New Zealanders would say to me, how come you Jews or you Israelis, you know, they have a different term for you every day, you Jews or you Israelis, you just can't get on with the Arabs, or the Muslims, whatever they term them for that day. How come you, look, we don't like Australians, so we go and play cricket, and we try to beat them on the cricket field. Can't you do that over there? And you think I'm joking. But go to New Zealand and you understand why. End of the world, no problems around. And it might just be the same in the United States. When someone comes to the Middle East and they try to resolve the problem and understand the problems here, what are they seeing when they look inside? In essence, a reflection of their own life experiences, their own values. Does that mean that President Obama's values and life experiences are wrong? No. Okay? Or John Kerry, who's trying to negotiate peace between us and the Palestinians now, your Secretary of State, you're not all from America, right? All of you?
No.
Okay, so, serious, are there Canadians here?
Yeah.
Okay, British?
No.
Australians?
We have one Australian.
Yeah, you have to get rid of the Australians. So, my father's Australian, so I can say that. So, you understand? It's a different world. Now, let's be clear about something. Okay, let's be clear. And it sort of relates to the Siman here. Siman Shela. Okay, relates. Just because you're sitting inside doesn't mean you're seeing outside the four glass walls. What do I mean? You can look like you're looking, but what are you seeing? All right? That's crucial as well. Don't assume just because we're Jewish, or just because we're Torah Jews, or just because we're Israelis, or supportive of Israel, doesn't mean we're seeing the whole picture. Not even the whole pro-Israel picture. Okay? Now, my wife promises me that if I talk for the next hour and quarter, hour and a half, whatever, you guys will fall asleep. Okay? She thinks I'm very bored. Okay? She's a lovely girl. So, the truth is this, right? This is it. If I say something that you disagree with, or you have no idea what I'm talking about, my New Zealand accent confuses you. I say a word in Hebrew or Arabic or English that just gets you lost. Do something to stop me. Express an opinion. Throw a chair. Hit the guy beside you, okay? Make it happen so that we have a conversation. This is not about me talking to you. I didn't come to brainwash you. Not really. Okay, now, let's start here. Okay? Now, I want to promise you a few things. I'm not going to talk with you the whole time, and there's not going to be Max the whole time. Alright, we're going to watch about 8 video clips. All of them are good, because I chose them. And one of them is going to include Jon Stewart and The Daily Show.
Yes.
Okay? It's fairly clean on this place. Okay? It's completely, it's just funny. It's good. They resolved the whole Israel-Palestinian conflict in about 3.5 minutes. Okay? So we'll have fun as well if you guys stay with us. But let's make sure we're all on the same page. Where's Israel on this map? The little white dot, right? Now, what does PA stand for up there? Are you sure? Yeah, it's the Palestinian Authority. They're basically the governing body of the Palestinians up until this point, until they have what they're trying to get right now, which is a state. Okay, the Palestinian Authority under the control of a guy called Mahmoud Abbas, the president. Okay, now, that little white dot, how big is it? Anyone here from New Jersey? Okay. So, they say what? They say that Israel is about the size of New Jersey. That's not huge. New Jersey is not a large state when it comes to the United States, correct? Good. Now, who doesn't like New Jersey? I understand. So, okay, it's okay to visit. So, New Jersey. If you don't like New Jersey, then Israel is the same size as El Salvador. Who likes El Salvador? So you're okay. So, look at this, folks. Look at the region. Here's Israel. And the Palestinian Authority squashed in New Jersey. And look at the sizes around it. Look at the sizes of those countries geographically. Population-wise, I don't have the populations up there, but you know they're tens of millions plus. We have, what, 8 million here? Of which there are, what, 6.8 million Jews and 1.2 million Arabs living in Israel. And then you've got the Palestinians as well, 2 to 3 million. In a little place. Now, when you buy a house in America or in Canada or wherever you choose, what do you look for in a property? Location, location, location. What was the Kodesh Baruch Hu thinking? Alright? To be cynical about it. Okay? Is property prices going to rise in this region? In this neighborhood? Okay? But seriously, folks. Hashem probably had all good in mind. Right? But look what it's become. And the neighbors are not the kind of the neighbors that you'd probably want to share a street with necessarily. Some of them we've made peace with, Egypt, Jordan. Others were a long way away from doing so. And it creates problems. Okay? Now, who can explain to me this map? I promise you in 2 minutes we'll be watching the Daily Show. Okay? I hope you brought your popcorn. What's going on in this map? Because if we're going to discuss Yehuda v'Shomron, the West Bank, the settlements, and that big issue, you have to understand how that issue began. Before you go traveling there. So while you're walking through the Tanakh, you're actually walking through international law and all those kinds of things as well. Yo. Good. You know, there's a street in Katamon. Anyone hang out in Katamon on Shabbat in Jerusalem? There's a street called Kaftet in November. That's why it's called Kaftet in November. Because on that day in 1947, the United Nations decided there will be a Jewish state and British mandate Palestine. You know, we all knew that they didn't need to tell us. We know that we've been here for thousands of years, but to actually make a nation state, we needed someone to tell us we could. And what they did is they offered two states. They said, hey, there's 1.2 or so million Palestinians, or as they're called today, Arab residents of Palestine, then living there. So they have to have a state too. There are only 600,000 Jews, maybe not even that many at this point. Okay? So let's make two states. The gray will be Palestine for the Arabs, and the yellow will be for the Jews. Now what's wrong with this map, or what's good about this map? Yes, sir. What separated? Aren't connected or are? Between Palestine and Israel? I see what you mean. Yeah, there's those thin points in two places, which is almost just asking for conflict. Keep in mind, the conflict didn't begin in 1948, did it? There's been riots, there's been killing, there's been tremendous clashes between Jews and Muslims in Eretz Israel leading up to this point. Okay? Indefensible. Look how wide Israel would be there. Israel today, as you'll see in a minute, is 9 miles wide, 11 miles, let's see, 11 miles, I think, between the Tanya, town you all know of, and the West Bank. George W. Bush once said famously, apparently, that in Texas, we have driveways 9 miles long. Okay, that's about it. Very intelligent guy. Okay, so, 9 miles wide, and this is even shorter. Okay? Have a look at the Negev. Any of you been to the Negev for a tiyul or anything like that? You've been down to Eilat, you've been to, you know, Bedouin tent, anything like that? Okay, so, about every 10 minutes in the desert today, you have a gas station. You can buy your hot dog, you can buy your Coke, you can, you know, use the air conditioning to cool off. What do you think was there in 1947? Just David Ben-Gurion trying to make the desert bloom, which he succeeded in doing, with a little bit of help from above. Okay? What do you think was there? Nothing. How much, what percentage of this new state of Israel, which the UN is offering, is the Negev and desert? It's about 2/3. So David Ben-Gurion, the first Israeli Prime Minister, had a choice to make. Do I say yes to the UN and get a homeland for the Jewish people? A place for people to go for refuge, a place for people to come home and realize the dream? Or do I say no and fight on to get a state that's actually defensible, that actually recognizes our rights? You didn't point out to me Yerushalayim. Where's Yerushalayim on this map? We're not talking about East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem here. How do Jews get through to Jerusalem? Or how do we support the Jews who are left in that international zone in Jerusalem? It's complicated. Alright? Now what happens here? Ben-Gurion says what? And the Arab side and Palestinian leadership of what there was at the time says?
No.
No. And what happens then is this. Watch carefully. Watch the grey, folks. Where does the grey go? The grey goes. Out. Disappears. Okay? Goodbye. Palestinians of the time, you're offered a state. Goodbye. You said no. There's a war. The War of Independence, as we call it. Somehow, 600,000 Jews beat off 6 Arab armies. Okay? Nisim v'niflaot. Amongst other things. Okay? And what happens here? Look at the borders. I know the map is slightly different proportions here. Have a look. Our border's there. Watch the yellow. Our border's here. We've expanded. We've pushed the West Bank in this. In fact, we've taken all of the Galilee. And we've taken that area down by Gaza, south of Gaza as well. We've ended up with much more. Who took the West Bank, folks? Legally? They occupied, you know, you've heard the word occupation, right? Israel's occupying the West Bank. Israel's occupying Palestinian land. Jordan occupied the West Bank for 19 years. And for 19 years, Jews could not go to the Kotel. Okay? Jews could not buy burgers bar in the Jewish quarter. Alright? There was no access. Okay? Talking of freedom of religion in this land. Okay? 2 countries in the world recognize Jordan's control. Pakistan and Jordan. 2 world powers of morality and good legal thought. Okay? That's it, folks. Now, to a birthright group, then I have to tell them, why do we call it Samaria? But as you heard in the introduction here, you guys need no explanation as to why it's called Yehuda v'Shomron. I don't have to tell you that dotted all around the West Bank, even though the world doesn't talk about it, are the holiest sites for Am Yisrael. You've been to Hebron, right? To Hebron. I don't even have to, like you guys, I don't have to get into that. Right? Joseph and his technicolored dream coat, okay? We can't even go and visit him without heavy armored guard. Right? In Shechem. In Nablus. Alright? Dotted all over here. Now let's say something important here. Because I think this might be a little bit, this lecture, a little bit on the advocacy side as well. Most of you will probably go back to university at some stage, right? Otherwise your parents will cut up the credit card. Okay? Or some of you might stay Shana Bet Bizat Hashem or something like that. Okay? But at the end of the day, before you make Aliyah, you will probably face some sort of backlash on campus. Okay? And I want to tell you something about advocacy. It goes like this. When it comes to the West Bank, if a Muslim wants to believe that the West Bank and this land is holy to him, or the Palestinians want to believe it's holy to them, ze beseder gamur. They have a right to believe it. Okay? Do I think they have more right than us? Not necessarily. Okay? But we don't stand up as advocates for Israel and say, you have no right. Okay? In my opinion, that's not a left-wing view or an anti-Israel view. That is a recognition that every religion in the world can believe what they want. What bothers me more than anything is that you do not hear the international media or people on campuses and so on talking about the Jewish narrative. What about Jewish religious rights of self-determination in the West Bank? Okay? It's okay to say. It's fine. You can believe that. I accept that. But we have rights too. That's what's forgotten a little bit. Okay? What I've just described to you now, the Tanakhi side as such, the biblical side, is one of the major issues. And when we talk about the settlements, folks, the world is talking about all the settlements built in the West Bank since 1967. Today, 350,000 to 400,000 Jews live in the West Bank, in towns, and in East Jerusalem as well, which the world also says is not ours. Okay? Yo. What rights are we missing? Yeah. Sure. Their narrative is easier sometimes. But the truth is that it's not about what we're missing out on. It's about the fact that the world says that what we're doing to realize our rights of self-determination is illegal, immoral. That we have to, the whole thing now is that we have to get out of the West Bank. That is what the world wants us to do. They don't want us to be in Hebron. Okay? And Hebron is a really difficult situation. 100,000 plus Palestinians and hundreds only of Israelis. Okay? For example. But it's our second holiest site. Okay? Alright? It's complicated. So the holiness issue, which John Stewart's going to deal with the second, is the first one. What else is the problem when the world says get out of the West Bank? What do you see the problem? The second problem. We discussed it before briefly.
Borders.
What?
Borders.
Are we willing to say, okay, you're right, we'll go back to 11 miles between Tel Aviv and the West Bank and 9 miles to Netanya. You know, when you landed at Ben Gurion Airport, that's probably about here. What is that, 5 miles? Do you understand the risk? We withdrew from Gaza, right? Controversially. 21,000 rockets and mortars have been fired from Gaza since 2001. Now imagine if they're firing them from the West Bank into all those cities and Jerusalem. And Beit Shemesh. And everywhere like that. Yo.
So what do you do with the confusion that where it's like you people living there now, you should be in. And it's there's like, I don't know, what do you do?
No, so that's the problem. What do you do? You know, we moved 9,000 people out of Gaza, which was heart-wrenching enough and difficult enough for the government to place them in jobs and houses and so on. But we're going to do that with 350,000? Are we going to do that with 100,000? It's very complicated. Okay? The issue of security is huge. Okay? All West Bank near the border is mountainous, looking down on the rest of Israel. That's strategic. And then there's all the international law issues we'll discuss with you. Okay, this is a guy called Barack Obama. He's just been to the dentist. Okay? He's been trying to bring these sides together for a very long time. And he hasn't succeeded. And it has nothing to do with supporting Obama or Mitt Romney or Roseanne Barr or whoever you want to support for president. Okay? George W.W. was trying to do this for years, bring the parties together. That's Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel on the left, and Mahmoud Abbas on the right. Bill Clinton tried to do it. Without success. Okay, Jimmy Carter as well at least had success making peace with Egypt. but not since with the Palestinians. In fact, it goes back. This is not a new problem. Let's have a look now. Let's watch John Stuart. Let's see how they would resolve the issue of the West Bank on religious terms and see how the arguments come out. Okay?
For more on this intractable problem, we go to senior Middle East correspondent John Oliver.
Hi, John, I've got amazing breaking news. A new religious scroll has been discovered that may hold the key to a lasting peace in the Middle East.
Does this scroll provide evidence to one group's claims?
It absolutely does, John. It's all right here in black and papyrus. This scroll actually reveals that the real Jewish promised land is not the land of Judea and Samaria, but right here in Halifax, Canada. Yeah.
The biblical Jewish promised land, is Halifax.
No, actually, John, it's pronounced Halifax. It's a little
technical. Halifax.
Yeah,
Halifax.
Troy.
Halifax.
No, John, it's Halifax.
Halifax.
We roll it.
Halifax.
Yeah.
Halifax.
Yeah, that's closer.
Excuse me, John.
Asif Mandi?
Yes, this is outrageous, okay? This area has always been and always will be sacred to Muslims. This area contains some of the most sacred sites in all of Islam.
You're talking about Halifax.
First of all, it's pronounced Halalifax.
John, I can prove it. It's all right here in Hebrew. In fact, let me read it to you for a second. Here we go.
This land clearly belongs to the Jews. I want to make that absolutely clear. I spoke to Muhammad last night and he's cool with it. It's really not as complicated as it seems.
He's just chanting English.
What?
This is ridiculous. Okay, according to the Quran, Halalifax contains the very lake where Muhammad first went ice fishing. He caught a bass this big.
No. Hey, Mangli. I'll believe that when I see a picture of it.
You know I can't show you one!
Oh, that's very convenient. Oh, that's so convenient, isn't it?
Now, John, you are being intentionally provocative.
No, that's not it at all.
Hey, who threw that?
Asif!
Threw what?
No, Asif, I think that rock came from your area.
Yeah, so now I'm responsible for everything that comes from my body.
You're a liar!
Okay, so why would I show you a video like that? It's not just so you laugh and it's not just to keep you awake and interested, okay? This is a very good representation of Israel-Palestinian negotiations, it really is. There is so much finger pointing, so much not listening to each other, so much no meeting of minds, that for 3 or 4 years they didn't speak. They couldn't agree on which coffee to drink, whether to order shawarma or falafel. We're discussing borders and refugees in Jerusalem now or later, whatever. They couldn't get there. Only last year, at the end of last year, when Israel took the tough decision to release 104 murderers, terrorists, to tease the Palestinians back to the negotiating table, only then did they come to talk. And now those talks are about as good as those. Getting very, very nowhere. Okay? As far as we know. And that idea of releasing prisoners has become a big issue in Israeli society. To release murderers of kids and women and so on, some of them very famous attacks on Israel, infamous attacks on Israel, we're due to release the last lot in a couple of weeks. There's a question mark whether we will if the peace process is not going anywhere. Okay? Now, truth be told, that is not the real picture. Okay? That is not the real picture of what we have to understand. Okay? Give me 1 second, and then we'll get into Tachlis. Anyone have any questions at this point? Now watch this video. This video Well, it's really time for you guys to do some analysis, okay? So if you have a pen and paper, you can write. Otherwise, write in your head, okay? What do you see here? What's the messages? What do they leave out? What story don't they tell? What are they insinuating? How do we tell the story differently? This is a crucial video. It's a great video. They do this kind of stuff really well. Okay, I want to hear your feedback after you've watched this, okay?
Ms. Keller, I have a question. You were talking about the Israelis and the Palestinians, but I don't see Palestine on the map.
Well, Lisa, the Palestinians live here, but they don't have a country of their own.
Why not?
It's complicated, but let me try to explain. Wanted a country and a place they call the home. After World War II, Western powers divided it between them, but Arab nations said no. Over the years, wars were fought with the new country of Israel, and Israel won, taking control of Palestinian land. There hasn't been peace since. Now 1.5 million Palestinians live in Gaza, packed into this tiny strip of land. And more are refugees in other countries or live here, in East Jerusalem and the West Bank. But Israeli governments have covered this Palestinian land with new Jewish towns called settlements. Settlers are just 1/10 of the population, but they've taken over most of the land. The settlements are like colonies, built to control as much land and water as possible. They're illegal under international law, but no one stops them. Some settlements have a lot of guns, but this is not the Wild West. They have malls, factories, and swimming pools. They get 3 times as much water as Palestinian villages, which have to deal with shortages and settlement sewage. The settlements are connected by a maze of roads, some only Israelis can use. While Palestinians can spend hours every day passing through military checkpoints just to get to school, or work, or even the hospital. Some Palestinians have never been able to visit relatives who live just miles away. Israel has also built a huge security wall that's taken over even more land. It cuts some Palestinian villages down the middle, separating farmers from their lands and people from their friends and family. So the real map looks like this, with the wall, roads, and over 200 settlements squeezing Palestinians into small pockets. You see, Lisa, today there still really isn't a place that Palestinians can call their own. Some have turned to violence and even terrorism, and attacks in recent years by both sides have killed over 1,000 Israelis and over 6,000 Palestinians.
But why?
Well, Lisa, many people are afraid. Millions of Jews were murdered during the Holocaust, pushing them to fight harder for a safe homeland. And after decades of suffering under Israeli control, Palestinians are desperate for freedom and an independent state.
It's a sad story. But there is hope.
Most Israelis and Palestinians agree on 2 states for 2 peoples. So does President Obama.
It is time for these settlements to stop. The only resolution is through 2 states where Israelis and Palestinians each live in peace and security.
But powerful extremists in the Middle East and Washington are doing all they can to destroy this chance for change. Only an unprecedented global movement can put an end to decades of violence and injustice. The time is now. Join the campaign for peace at abbas.org.
You're welcome to join in your own time. So, what do we see there? Let's take it apart and go deep.
They kind of made us look like the bad guy.
A little bit. How did they do that?
They were putting, I believe if you're a neutral, no matter what 2 sides are fighting, if you're a third party and you're judging them, you got to be as a spirit of both sides as you can, and feel like they were being a little more fair to one side than the other.
Yeah. Okay. How do we see that? Yeah, what do we see?
They took all the arguments that I played for what is the use of the
media. All right, give me an example. Like, explain, go deep. Right. So we see that a little bit. We see the old messages. You know, I'm on Twitter quite a lot, and you see the old, you know, today's Nazis are the Zionists. And they're doing to the Palestinians what the Nazis did to them. Doesn't make any sense to us, right? But to the naked eye, to Joe blogs around America, it means everything. All those buzzwords. Okay? The whole Holocaust thing here. Anyone have a different take on that? Is the Holocaust the reason that Jews fight hard for their homeland? Is the Holocaust the reason that Jews are in Israel Bichlal? But that's what they do. The Jews needed a homeland after the Holocaust. Yeah, sure we did. But haven't we been here in that West Bank that they're criticizing us about? Weren't we there 3,000 years ago? Plus, did we need 6 million to get killed so that someone can make a video and say that's why the Jews are allowed here? And did you see the comparison, folks? What came straight after the Holocaust pictures? Huh? No.
War, fighting.
What?
Fighting wars.
Fighting wars, but? Yeah, the Palestinian kids behind the wall. Israelis fight hard because the Holocaust, whatever the wording was, and Palestinians under, what did they call it? Israeli control, brutal Israeli control. Like, hello? You see what's happened to the world's moral compass? That a fight over our rights to the West Bank has become equated with what was done to Jews in the Holocaust. And if you don't think, if you think I'm exaggerating, that's fine, you're welcome to throw that chair or whatever you want, but that kind of messaging seeps into people's brains. Most people are not sitting in Yeshivat Lev HaTorah learning enough to know that that's not correct. Most people are living in Middle America listening and learning from this. Yep.
They also don't mention the Arab lands that Jews
left. The Arab lands that Jews left? Is that what you said?
That Jews can't really stop.
Right. No mention of what would happen if you all went for a tiul tomorrow in Ramallah or Shechem or Gaza City. You want to say something? Yeah.
I don't know, I'm in the shape.
Very recently.
They just totally ignore the game with Gaza.
Right. They asked us to leave so they could. Well, they didn't ask us to leave, but they keep on saying the settlements are the problem. So we said, okay, if the settlements are the problem, whatever Ariel Sharon's actual motivations were, we don't know, but you asked us to leave. All right, so we'll give you a chance. If the settlements are the problem, we're out of Gaza. No, there's no soldiers there. But tens of thousands of rockets since. Okay, you saw, right? They tried to say, yeah, we know Israelis have been hurt too, and they showed one Arab terrorist, and they showed one rocket go off, not a real great effect. And then they said, yeah, but Israelis, you know, 1,000 we killed, and 6,000 Palestinians, you know, they take away the impact. Yeah.
They also, they tell the story through, like, the girl asking the questions, which is really innocent and stuff. And they did a really good job, like, with the video itself. It's like, every single time the wall goes up, like, some car flips, and, like, they compare the swing to the Jews, and, like, the dryness of the other one.
Yeah.
So they use that sort of media.
Right.
Well.
Now, don't get me wrong. I don't know how many of you have spent Shabbatot in the West Bank, Efrat, or Gush Etzion, or anywhere like that, okay, around here, but yeah, sure, people in Israel live better than most Palestinians do. Are there wealthy Palestinians? Oh yes, I see them in their SUVs and doing other things as well around. Do they live worse than us? Yes, they probably do. Is that our fault? Not necessarily. If we could make peace and make things better, their lives would improve as well, and they have improved dramatically since suicide bombings and so on stopped. Okay, I don't know who is next. I don't want to insult anybody, but yo.
Yeah, cherry pick sources and facts. Who? I guess there are a lot of facts and also a lot of exaggeration.
Yeah.
And they were showing the settlements and they doubted it and ran it and they said that they're squishing the Palestinians into a small area.
Right.
Reality.
Yeah, my understanding is that Jewish towns in the West Bank make up about 5% of the entire land space.
Yeah, also they said that they didn't talk about how like, terrorist attacks happened after
the time. Right. Right. How's the security fence presented? As you mentioned, someone mentioned.
Boom.
Yeah, it's the Berlin Wall, folks. All right, cuts off everybody. It's a terrible thing. They called it a security fence, and at the very least, I give them the credit for that. They could have called it an apartheid-like wall, like others call it, but didn't explain why. It wasn't built to cut off anyone from anything, except from suicide bombers who used to walk from Bethlehem to Emek Rephaim and Malcha just as a stroll in the morning and blow people up. It was built to stop suicide bombing. If there was no terrorism, it would have never been built. Right? They look at the consequence. Now, have Palestinians in some way suffered from that wall? Sure. Sure. Some did lose land to it. But you know, want to know something very interesting? Palestinians can apply to the Israeli Supreme Court to have the wall moved. And in several instances, the Supreme Court has said, and this is how they balance it, they say, does the wall being placed in that place improve Israel's security or reduce a risk greater than the damage to the Palestinian family or owners of the land? If the answer is no, the wall has to be moved, and it has been. If the risk is greater to Israelis than the damage to Palestinians, the wall stays. But we're open about it. We're willing to judge ourselves on it. Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned checkpoints, right? That's a big issue. How come Palestinians don't have freedom of movement? Let me tell you facts, folks. During the Intifada, during while there was terrorism at us all the time from the West Bank after the year 2000, there were about 500 plus checkpoints that the IDF put up around the West Bank. You know how many there are today? 14. 14. Now why is that? Because Bli Ayin Hara, restaurants are not blowing up in Ben Yehuda Street. May it stay that way. Alright? Buses are not blowing up. But they were, and I lived through that. I was living in Jerusalem as a single guy. We never left our houses. We went to work. We eyed everyone on the bus. We tried to spot the suicide bomber. I'm telling you the truth. And at night, we ordered in pizza. That was before Burgers Bar arrived on the scene. We ordered in pizza, and we walked down the street to get a DVD from the DVD dispenser machine, and we invited over to watch it at home because the thought of going to town was too frightening. Imagine that today. That's why the security fence was built, and that's why there's checkpoints. Yeah. Right. So that's the issues. I want to stop you guys. You all get a chance to speak. I'm going to show you a guy called Saeb Arakat. Anyone know who he is? Great PR guy, except he's not on our side. He's been the chief Palestinian negotiator for about 20 years. We've had a lot of prime ministers on our side from then. I think it might be time for them to change their negotiator. Okay? Here's the deal. Here's what he says. Listen carefully. How you present your side. He's incredible. Listen to the buzzwords. All he talks about is occupation and settlement as if that is the biggest problem. And listen to his Hebrew.
The Palestinian chief negotiator Saeb Arakat says peace talks cannot move forward as long as the Israeli settlement expansions continue in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Arakat made the remark yesterday while addressing reporters at the World Economic Forum in Jordan. He said, without a halt to Israeli settler activity, peace negotiations between the two countries would be almost impossible.
Palestinians have no conditions whatsoever. But as Israelis, you have to understand the difference between your obligations and our conditions. When we say Israel must stop settlement activities, this is an obligation. The lack of the ability of the Israeli government to utter their acceptance of two states on 1967. They have to be tutored to say Ahad Tesha Sheva. This is what prevents the negotiations. No one benefits from the success of Secretary Kerry than Palestinians, and nobody loses more of the failure of Mr. Kerry than Palestinians. Every time, the pattern in all Israeli governance is that when they were given the chance to choose between settlements and peace, for a reason, they chose settlements. You know that, we know that, and this time, Israel must make the choice.
You know that, we know that, and now Israel must make the choice. If you weren't in Lev HaTorah, wouldn't you believe it? Now, let's not kid, like I said about Muslims believing about the West Bank. It's okay to say, I agree. The settlements are a question up for debate. Yeah, they create controversy. It's okay. They do. See? Right. The key is, the way he words things are very interesting. Palestinian conditions that we put on the talks are different than Israeli obligations. They're against international law. Which international law? Okay? He's a very convincing guy. Every time we start peace talks, Israel builds settlements. Now what do we know? What year was the Palestinian Liberation Organization established? That was once a terror group. Yasser Arafat and those used to hijack planes and kill Israelis and so on. What year? 1960? Correct. 1964. Quick question, folks. Whoever gets it right gets a free year in Israel. What year, if the PLO was created in 1964 to liberate Palestine, what year did Israel occupy the West Bank and East Jerusalem? Seven. Ask yourselves, what was the Palestinian Liberation Organization trying to liberate in 1964 if Jordan held the West Bank? Israel proper. Israel within the Green Line. Israel is not up for debate. Okay? Now, we're going to flick on the lights for a few minutes. What's the time now? I've lost track. 5 to 5. Okay. I'm going to pass you out two documents, okay? It's time for some chavruta, all right? And you want to pass these on. Thank you. There are 2 pages, so make sure you have... Hold on a second. They're already sorted. So take the first 2 pages that you reach, okay? Hold on a second. The top 2 pages that you receive, by the top. Oh, it's not quite sorted correctly. 1 second.